You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, this is Tim Rice. Welcome to episode 47 of my podcast, Get Onto My Cloud. The original studio album of Jesus Christ Superstar, which Andrew Lloyd Webber and I wrote and produced in 1969 and 1970, was the work that launched our careers in several other areas, concert, stage, and film. Everything happened rather quickly after the instant, almost global acceptance of the recording, particularly in America. Within 6 months of the album's release, concert tours in arenas around America, both official and bootleg, were doing mighty business. Less than a year after the album topped the US charts, the theatrical version was running on Broadway, and just 18 months after that, the movie version was released. The contribution that Andrew and I made to the Superstar movie was minimal. In stark contrast to the ultimate fate of Evita, the film eventually directed by Alan Parker and starring Madonna, which appeared nearly 20 years after the stage show, the film of Superstar was set up at breakneck speed by our producer Robert Stigwood and MCA via MCA's Universal Pictures. The director was to be Norman Jewison. This was great news. A, I'd heard of him. He was, of course, one of the most respected film directors in the world. But at that time, what I knew about international film directors was pretty flimsy. B, he'd directed one of my all-time favorite films, In the Heat of the Night, starring Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger, to this day still high in my lifetime top 10. And C, he'd just completed work on an excellent musical film, Fiddler on the Roof. Indeed, it was while he was shooting that picture, in what was then Yugoslavia, that our albums, Pontius Pilate, Barry Denham, who'd had a part in Fiddler, introduced Norman to the Superstar album, firing the distinguished Canadian's enthusiasm for our work, or at least for that work. We met and liked Norman and his team, who were to be based in England at Pinewood Studios for the duration of the Superstar film production. I was asked to write the first draft screenplay. I set about this with great enthusiasm and minimum concern for budget, certain that a massive Ben-Hur kind of treatment was essential. Tens of thousands of extras would soon be thanking me for a boost to their incomes. After all, Superstar had not got where it had by excess subtlety or by its creators thinking small. Obviously, all the words were already in place, so it was merely a question of my pointing out which vast and spectacular visual effect accompanied which song. Should the procession of camels enter from the left or the right of the frame? What was the best marching formation for the Roman legions? These were the only kinds of problems I faced, so that within 2 weeks of being asked, I'd submitted my script. Certain that I would not be required to do anything more, I sat back to await the invitation to Israel. The filming was to take place where the actual original events had, rather than in Pinewood, to see my brilliant and expensive ideas transferred to celluloid. I was right in that I was not required to do anything more. Norman and Robert rejected my screenplay outright and signed Melvin Bragg to write another, with a cast of dozens rather than thousands. I was fast learning how feebly writers vibrated on the film world's Richter scale. I was not even asked to have a rethink. Melvin was signed without my knowledge or consent, and he too, unencumbered by actually having to think up any plot or lyrics, delivered his screenplay in next to no time. I suppose I was fairly miffed about this at the time, but Melvin's a delightful fellow and a terrific writer, who actually appeared to like Superstar. Consequently, it was difficult for me to be too upset. Even if I had been, I could not have been half as annoyed as Andrew was by the refusal of anyone to trust him with the orchestrations for the movie. As his orchestrations on the original recording had been so good and such an essential feature of the work's success, the decision to hand over his baton to André Previn struck us as bordering on the insane. We had at least heard of him, and I'd quite liked one or two of his 60s jazz albums, but as he made no effort to hide his basic loathing of the score, he went into print some years later referring to it as a piece of shit, making one wonder how he could have so debased himself to accept the job, we were unable to register much enthusiasm for his appointment. Previn had even less to do than Melvin, as he merely rehashed Andrew's original arrangements, for which he was ludicrously nominated for an Oscar. Mercifully, he didn't win. In his day, he wrote the tunes for a couple of musicals, Coco and The Good Companions, but despite working with two of the greatest lyricists of all time, Alan J. Lerner and Johnny Mercer, respectively, neither show made a lasting impact. Could the music have been to blame? I cannot possibly comment. With Melvin and Andre in position, Andrew and I took a total back seat. Despite, or because of this, the production roared ahead without us. The cast were 100% American, I'm not quite sure why, and they were soon out in Israel filming. Robert and Universal Pictures naturally ran into a bit of opposition, re their choice of location, but the eventual approval of the Israeli government was a big plus for the film's credibility and PR. David Land, our irrepressible manager, see Get Onto My Cloud, episode 42. David, Andrew and I flew out to Israel. This was in November 1972, to have a look at things, and we continued to exert no influence whatsoever on proceedings, spending most of our time sightseeing in Jerusalem, Jericho and the Dead Sea. We teamed up there with the hip writer Nick Cohn, who was on an assignment on behalf of Playboy magazine to write an article on JC Superstar being filmed in Israel. I was a great fan of Nick, who'd written one of the first intelligent histories of pop music, a wildly witty tome entitled Wop Bop A Loop A Lop A Lop Bamboo. We got on really well, friends for life, for at least a week or two. 2 months later, we read his highly sarcastic and fairly abusive piece about Superstar that he delivered to the famous Socially Desperate magazine. Incidentally, Nick hit the jackpot a few years later when Robert Stigwood, no less, turned a slender article of his about New York kids' Saturday nights out into the basis of Saturday Night Fever. Good luck to him. Carl Anderson and Ted Neely played Judas and Jesus in the movie. They'd both sung the roles on Broadway, and I was particularly pleased that Carl, unlucky to be passed over as the first Judas on stage anywhere in the world, was signed by Norman Jewison for the film. Here are Carl and Teddy singing part of The Last Supper from the movie soundtrack, their characters nearly coming to blows in between the ever more woozy and liquor-filled choruses of the apostles, who are drunkenly unaware of the final argument between their leader and his betrayer.
The end is just a little harder when brought about by friends.
I'll be remembered. Yes, I must be out of my head. Look at your blank faces. My name will mean nothing 10 minutes after I'm dead. One of you denies me. One of you betrays me.
No! 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 No!
Peter will not me. In just a few hours, three times will deny me. And that's not all I see. One of you here dining, one of my 12 chosen, will lead to betray me.
Cut out the dramatics, you know very well who.
Why don't you go do it?
You want me to do it?
Hurry, they are waiting.
If you knew why I'd do it,
I don't care why you do it.
To think I admired you, well now I despise you.
Liar,
you Judas wanted me to do it. What if I just stayed here and ruined your ambition? Christ, you deserve it!
Hurry, you fool! Hurry and go! Save me your speeches, I don't wanna know! Go! Go!
Look at all my trials and tribulations.
Die around us, and all because of you. But saddest cut of all, someone has to turn you in, like a common criminal, like a wounded animal. A jaded mandarin, a jaded mandarin, like a jaded, a faded, faded, jaded, jaded mandarin. Get out, they're waiting. Get out.
Two great voices, Carl Anderson as Judas, Teddy Neely as Jesus. My principal memories of our visits to the filming were hilarious trips in a beat-up van around Israel with David Land in top form, regaling us with his wartime experiences. I was the first man away at Dunkirk. And less than politically correct views about the then political situation, often delivered astride a camel. Yvonne Elliman, Mary Magdalene, and Barry Denon, Pontius Pilate, were the only performers on the original album who were chosen for the film. Yvonne and her husband, Bill Oakes, one of Robert Stigwood's right-hand men, joined us for my 28th birthday celebrations at a tavern in Jericho. But all in all, we felt surplus to requirements, felt that the shooting was progressing okay, and returned home after just a few days, feeling it was perhaps about time we dedicated ourselves and energy to a new project. The film was eventually released with reasonable fanfare in the summer of 1973, barely a year after the debut of the West End stage show, which had been a bona fide smash, unlike the Broadway version. The film was neither a huge success nor a complete flop. The basic concept, that presumably had been Norman's and or Melvin's idea, was that a bunch of wandering hippie actors, arriving in the actual places where Christ had lived and died, decided to do the show right then and there. So the action was really set in the 1970s, with Israeli warplanes and tanks occasionally intruding. Some critics considered the net result a little confused, and the 1970s hippie fashions were probably past their peak almost before the movie's release. Despite some beautifully photographed sequences and several fine performances, for the first time in its meteoric streak across the showbiz heavens, Superstar seemed a little out of touch and out of fashion. In some ways it was. In 1973, it had completed its supernova burst into prominence and would henceforth become an establishment musical, maintaining reasonable popularity, but never again a work with the power to shock or provoke. That at least was what we felt in the mid-70s, and we were pretty happy with that. However, we never remotely thought that half a century later it would still be going strong, and would still appeal to successive new generations, even causing controversy here and there. 50-plus years later, it's been exciting and gratifying when top actors and singers, not even born when we were out in the Israeli desert, continue to investigate and perform Superstar, such as the John Legend-led company in New York at Easter 2019. To return to Carl Addison and Teddy Neely, they eventually played more than 1,700 American concerts of Superstar together in what began as a 20th anniversary of the movie tour planned to last 3 months. It lasted 5 years. Teddy, at the age of 77, is still performing the role of Jesus in Superstar, albeit at the time of this recording, productions have been temporarily halted by COVID. His extraordinary voice has barely altered at all. He still hits staggeringly high notes in Gethsemane with apparent ease, and in recent years, I've witnessed him literally stop the show in Italy halfway through that aria on more than one occasion. He's become totally dedicated to the role, which he now plays primarily in Europe, and his personal following there is loyal and strong. I would not be at all surprised if he's still singing the role when he enters his ninth decade. I hope so. I'll be there. Even though he's now twice the age of many, not all, of his fellow performers, he looks ageless on stage, with amazing energy. It's long been a pleasure to see him both on stage and off. He's had time over the years for several other projects and performances, but to my amazed delight, he sees Superstar as his number one priority. Sad to say, the world can no longer see Carl Anderson. This terrific performer died in February 2004. In addition to his film and many theatrical performances as Judas in Superstar, he was a leading recording artist, contributing vocals to such classic albums as Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life, as well as releasing many solo albums in the soul, jazz, and pop fields. He appeared in several movies, including Spielberg's The Color Purple, several top-rated TV shows, and hit the pop charts in a big way in 1986, when his duet with Gloria Loring reached number 2 in the Billboard Hot 100. I had the honor of saying a few words about him during his memorial service in Los Angeles, which was an extraordinary combination of celebration and sadness, attended by hundreds of friends and admirers, including Stevie Wonder. Carl was an outstanding talent, and we were very fortunate to benefit from his gifts and from his encouragement when we did. Here is that major hit record, Friends and Lovers, Carl Anderson and Gloria Loring.
So I'll be
I last saw the movie of JCS around 2 years ago, when it was featured in a season of musical movies at the National Film Theatre, and I must say I thought it held up pretty well. The 1970s look is now so far in the past, although some of my nearest and dearest claim I've never quite shaken it off, that look is now so far in the past, it's safely fascinating, rather than embarrassingly out of date. And Carl and Teddy shine through as strong as ever. Perhaps we should not have rushed into making the film so speedily after our initial breakthrough, but I suppose we thought, and the producers certainly did, that we should strike while the iron was hot. We all assumed the iron would cool. I was surprised as anyone when it didn't. To end, here's another Carl-Teddy clash from the film soundtrack, Strange Things Mystifying. I'm not sure that I would have had an apostle interjecting with, "Cool it, man," but hey, it was 1972.
It seems to me a strange thing, mystifying, that a man like you can waste his time on women of her kind.
Hey, cool it, man.
Yes, I can understand that she amuses, but to let her kiss you, stroke your hair, that's hardly in your line. It's not that I object to her profession, but she doesn't fit in well with what you teach and say. It doesn't help us if you're inconsistent. They only need a small excuse to put us all away.
Who are you to criticize her? Who are you to despise her? Leave her, leave her, let her be now. Leave her, leave her, she's with me now. If your slate is clean, then you can throw stones. If your slate is not, then leave her alone.
That men like you can be so shallow, thick and slow. There is not a man among you who knows or cares if I come or go.
No, you're wrong, you're very wrong. 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 How can you say that? How can you say that? How can you say that? How can you say that?
Not one of you.
That was episode 47 of my podcast, Get Onto My Cloud, written and presented by me, Tim Rice, and produced by the ever-enthusiastic Peter Hobbs.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the SUFS. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, SUFS celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. SUFS has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.